Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
It's time for Aki's A-List. From the mind of the man who understands the four P's of Waddle's world, Aki's A-List. The top questions and topics floating around in Tyler Aki's mind.
Are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Aki's A-List on ESPN Chicago.
Sort of.
Chucky's in charge.
Chuck's in charge. So it is actually Charlie's C-List. And that's not a reference to, you know, the performance or the expectation. It's just, you know, the alliteration. Charlie's C-List.
First letter of his...
Yes.
We could also call it Bevin's B-List.
We could have.
I think you're more affectionately known as Charlie. By the way, the public has spoken, and we are in the minority, my friend.
Chardog Nation.
Chardog Nation is out in full force and loved his Kermit.
Okay, take Marty before we get to...
Marty's on the south side. What's up, Marty?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Love the show. I just got out of the dentist and tuned in, so I don't know who did it.
So you're high right now, right? Laughing gas is coursing through your veins.
I'm laughing. But that Kermit the Frog impression was spot on. I don't know what you guys are saying. That was brilliant.
Give us some more of that, Charlie.
Chardog Nation. Please.
Thank you very much.
Like that. Oh, my God. Hell yeah.
You're high, Marty. Marty, you're high
right now.
Have a good
one. Yeah.
Have a good one, Marty. Chardog Nation.
We're a big fan of Marty.
It was just Charlie speaking in a softer tone is all that was.
With a little bit of more oomph to it.
I don't get it. I don't.
A little more diction.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Diction.
So who else? There was just one person.
We got a couple tweets as well. Yeah, like,
they liked it?
Yeah.
Are they high too?
The char dogs are out in full force.
Okay. All right. What do you got, Charlie?
Hop on the chuck wagon.
All right. So we haven't talked a ton about Keenan Allen because there's just been so much going on throughout the week. I'm sure we'll get more kind of into the weeds as the offseason goes on and everything like that. But I would say the Bears arguably have one of the best 1-2 punches in the league, at least in the NFC, with Moore and Allen. Who do you think finishes with more yards?
I'll go
DJ Moore.
Yeah, I'll go DJ Moore. More of a yards after catch factor.
I think DJ was top five this year in yak, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe you're correct on that. Yeah, like DJ Moore, he's the younger guy. And I would bet on Keenan Allen missing more games than DJ Moore
When they traded for Keenan Allen, and I'm a huge fan of what they did, the first thing, a cap called me and said, what do you think? I said, well, I think it's a really good trade. I like what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Just understand he's going to miss two or three games more than likely because he's had hamstring issues in the past. And now he's going to play the majority of his games here in a colder environment than out in Los Angeles. So in the winter months, it's going to be probably a little more challenging, which is fine. I think he missed three games last year and still had over 100 catches.
Still had one of his best seasons of his career.
Yeah, the production was there. But I would still say that DJ Moore is going to have more receiving yards.
I would too. Like you look at just where their career trajectories are as well. DJ Moore is ascending. Keenan Allen's on the back nine of his career. Not that he can't be an effective player, but now I will say, if you were to ask me more touchdowns next year, maybe I go off of health and say DJ Moore, but if you gave me you stretch out basketball stats to like per 48. If you gave me like a touchdown percent, like a per
Keenan
17,
Allen probably.
Maybe Keenan Allen.
Yeah. Listen, he's an artist at that position. Mm-hmm. He knows how to run routes. He knows where to be. He's ultra reliable. I will ask you the question. Do you know who led the NFL in yards after the catch from a receiver position in 2023?
Is it Tyreek Hill?
Tyreek Hill was fourth with 652 yak yardage.
Debo would have been one of my guesses, but he missed a lot of time.
Too many injuries. Debo came in 12th with 527.
That's still pretty good.
CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee Lamb was number one, Chardog, with 680 yards after the catch. Number two was Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Number three was Rashee Rice.
Oh, wow.
Number four was Tyreek Hill. Breece Hall was, he's a running back, so he doesn't count. Puka Nacua was sixth.
Okay.
In terms of receivers, Collins was nine.
Nico Collins
Nico
from
Collins.
Houston.
Mm-hmm. Jamar Chase was 10. And DJ Moore was 11 with 539 yards. There was a time early in the season where I think only Tyreek Hill had more yards after the catch than DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. But I will say that DJ Moore will have more yards receiving.
Yeah, I would agree with
DJ
you.
Moore's not going to miss any time either. I mean,
tough,
knock on
tough
wood.
Guy, mm-hmm.
Plays every game, practices every day. I mean, there were a couple of injuries that I think I was shocked that he continued to play with this year. Mm-hmm. A couple of times he got his ankle caught, but maintained.
There was one game he really got his
it was
bell
Carol, was there, there was a Carol a game in Carol, the mm-hmm. Carolina game, I think, also. He got banged up a little bit, but he's tough as it gets. Yeah.
There was one game.
This is breaking news.
That's
Chicago's home for sports.
Shock you a little bit?
Yes.
Don't look at your phone. Let Chardon bring you the news.
All right. What do we got?
Well, we have a significant, I would say, development in the Shohei Ohtani situation because our friend Jesse Rogers just tweeted out that Major League Baseball has officially begun an investigation into this whole situation.
Now,
this is not nothing anymore.
This was, they were looking into it before, right? Is this just semantics?
He
because
said,
what I was reading earlier in the day was that Major League Baseball hadn't considered it an investigation, but they were definitely looking into it.
Yeah, they are opening a formal investigation into the gambling situation after learning about it through media reports earlier in the week.
And by the way, all breaking news on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by the Advantage Acura Group, home of the 60-minute guarantee.
So what is your anticipation? I don't mean to hijack the C-list. We'll get back to it real quick, Charlie. What is your anticipation that the true story is going to be? Or do you not think that we'll ever get the full story?
I don't think we will. I don't think we will.
You think that Major League Baseball will find a way, even if there is something more nefarious, to keep it from the public?
If Major League Baseball loses Shohei Ohtani, what is Major League Baseball in the view of the masses? Because that is the most think about how all offseason, and again, it wasn't as long and drawn out as like the Cody Bellingers and Blake Snells of the world, but how all offseason it was Shohei watch. Is this the week Shohei signs? Is this the week that we're going to finally get some news on Shohei? Everything about his life is so secretive to the point where during his courting process of free agency, it was known that if you leaked info, you could shoot yourself in the foot and put yourself out of the running. And that's why I don't think any of this is, he's too valuable to Major League Baseball, and he's too big of a figure within the game where I really see something coming down.
That would be very unfortunate, considering Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame mm-hmm. and Major League Baseball didn't do anything to protect him, but now they're going to protect Shohei? Has there been
you also say, too, at the time, baseball was in a different view of the rest of America?
Baseball was more popular back then mm-hmm. than it is now.
Now baseball's
so they're
a
struggling
run or two below that.
Right. So your insinuation is that they can't afford this hit.
Baseball didn't need Pete Rose at the time. I think baseball kind of needs Shohei Ohtani right now.
I think you nailed it when you said not much is known about him. I don't profess to know anything about him. But wouldn't you, just common sense would tell you, wouldn't it? You know who the guys are who are high rollers and guys mm-hmm. that have interests here or interests there.
Yeah.
Has there ever been any mention at all, a hint, a sniff, anything that Shohei was like this high-end gambler? I've never heard anything like
that. Right. But again, we don't really know much. And I think
he's been in Major League Baseball now for how many years, though?
Since 2017, I would
say. Okay, so we can say we don't know much about. We've mm-hmm. been. He's been part of the landscape for 6 or 7 years.
But think about it. He was a sensation when he came over, but it wasn't like he was.
I'm just saying, I get it, but I'm saying to you, he's not playing. He's not working remotely.
No, he's not.
So I mean, he's traveling with the team. He's interacting with the
but
guys.
It does
he's
seem
playing.
Like he's kind of on Shohei Island within the confines of the locker room.
But wouldn't you still know when you're hanging out with somebody? You would know
how many
you
people
would have a hint. You
how
would
many
have
people
something.
Are hanging out with him? Is the other thing.
I don't know. Look, I'm just speculating. And I'm not trying to make an excuse for him. If there was something going on like that, there would usually be someone say, yeah, you know, I mean, like we all had an inkling that, you know, not that he was doing anything horribly wrong, but that, you know, he had a taste for it.
But even still, like, it's either him or it's his interpreter.
So what is your
wouldn't
anticipation
people know
it's
about
be?
The interpreter? Right? If the interpreter had a...
I think it'd be easier to hide the interpreter's gambling issues than it would be Shohei's.
For sure. But I feel like people... Because think about it. Anytime you want to interact with Shohei, the interpreter probably has to be there.
Let me ask
you
a question. Isn't this really easy to determine what transpired?
It probably is.
I mean, just ask the bookie, the guy who's being investigated. Mm-hmm. Or... did he run all of his bets? Okay, this is just all speculation and alleging stuff. So it's either the book or the interpreter is the one that had the gambling issue, and Shohei was trying to do him a solid because he makes $900 trillion, and they're really good friends, or he was trying to keep it on the down low and was running his plays through the interpreter. Right?
Right.
I mean, like I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Unless Shohei is calling the bookie and making plays on his own, which is the least likely of all of
that,
right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other thing too is
how do you ever prove that it would be him making the bets?
You're probably right. I mean, the only people that would know would be
the
Shohei, interpreter. And maybe the bookie.
The bookie wouldn't even know. I mean, unless Shohei's interpreter was like, yeah, I'm making these bets for... And I believe I read somewhere, too, where the bookie was telling people that Shohei was a client, but he was doing that just to bolster his business and didn't have any evidence that that was the case. He was kind of running his mouth, or so they said. I think Major League Baseball has to investigate this.
No, I think they
just
have
from,
to.
Oh, you know,
absolutely
from,
have to
from,
investigate
from
it.
How the world would view this. So I don't necessarily think that this is step one towards a dark day ahead for baseball. I think this is what they had to do. They had to open up a formal investigation. So the appearance is that they're doing everything, whether it's John Smith or it's Shohei Ohtani, everyone's going to be given the same treatment, whether
now,
or not that's true.
Now, it would be interesting to see what a penalty is, because we know that technically, as long as all of these are, I believe, soccer bets, right? Supposedly.
Yes, but there is
the illegality of gambling in California.
Correct, but there is also something to compare it with. I was reading the Athletic article today, I think, with Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah.
There was a player, was it with the Marlins, that got busted doing the same thing, but they proved that he wasn't betting on baseball, but what he was doing was betting, I guess, with an illegal bookie, and all he got as a penalty was a fine.
Okay. So this could end up being a giant nothing, because I don't think the value of what you would be gambling should factor into what a penalty would be. Like, whether it was this guy with the Marlins, who I would guess wasn't in $4.5 million worth of gambling debt, I think we would have known that, what that number was. Whether it was him or Shohei, and it was these exorbitant amounts of money, I don't, if there was a giant difference between the amount that they were gambling, I don't think should matter. It is a penalty of the action, not of the amount lost or maybe even won. Like, that to me would not be something that I would put into the calculus of how I'm punishing him. So I just think that, like, if it does all come out that this is soccer or whatever, then it's a non-issue to me. I don't, whether it was interpreter or whatever, like, it's a non-issue.
Right, the penalty, if I can find the article at some point, the penalty was basically a fine. The player wasn't suspended because...
It was just because gambling was illegal in Florida.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what direction this is going, but I'm not surprised that it's been announced that Major League Baseball is doing an official investigation. They have to.
No, I 1,000% agree.
Because there can't be this appearance of him getting some sort of.
So I found what you were looking for. In 2015, MLB fined Marlins pitcher Jared Cosart an undisclosed amount after determining he placed illegal sports bets. Now, this is before gambling was legalized in the United States as well. But because the league found Cosart did not bet on baseball, that was the extent of his penalty.
It was just a fine.
You're right. If Shohei's not betting on baseball, then I think you have to apply. Like, A, you've got precedent here. And B, I think you have to apply a similar penalty.
Yeah.
It's just a fine.
Well, it's going to be an interesting. This is the last thing Major League Baseball needed.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. But back to you, Charlie.
All right. So the big talk, the big upset so far has been Kentucky losing last night to Oakland. Now there's a lot of talk of John Calipari potentially losing his job, most likely being on the hot seat. Has this run out for him? Interestingly, our local connection here, DePaul, their athletic director is Dwayne Peavy, who was sort of the right-hand man to Calipari when Peavy was at Kentucky. So I'm just curious, did DePaul maybe wait too long or did they act too quick in hiring Holtman instead of maybe waiting to see what could happen with Cal? Is there anything they can do, or like, is this just bad timing, bad luck?
I will defer to you. I will make one comment, then I'll turn it over to you, college basketball experts. I can't imagine that if Cal was sacked in Kentucky that he would come here to DePaul.
I will say this. If there's one guy that could do it, I think it's Cal. I think Cal could thrive here. He has an excellent recruiting base in this area. Think about the guys he's gotten out of this area. Anthony Davis, Derrick Rose, Tyler Ulis. He's gotten a number of really talented players. He's used Chicago as a pipeline to his stops at Memphis and Kentucky. And that's a guy who... You bring in Cal to this city, I think that's a needle mover higher. Now, I don't know if DePaul would be able to go out and do that. And by the way, we did get a little bit of DePaul basketball news. They hired Sylvie's guy, Brian Mullins. He's going to be an assistant on that DePaul staff with Chris Holtman now. But I do, I won't say DePaul acted too quickly, because I do think they got the best guy available at the time. And we don't even know if Cal's going to hit the open market. That's a whole other question. But I think Holtman has a decent chance to get DePaul, maybe not back, but at least competitive. Like, they are like a high school team playing in the Big East right now. I do think Holtman can at least make them respectable. I think Cal was a guy who could have actually gotten them back.
Yeah, but does Cal take a job like DePaul that doesn't carry the same weight that it did back in the Ray Meyer day? Like, that's this is a huge step back for Cal.
And I'm just...
This is obviously all, you know...
Yeah, it's all speculation. And that's a fair point to bring up.
So
would
my
he take
point
this?
Is, would he have ever taken it, even if they hadn't already moved and hired the existing coach?
I think it would come down to what other jobs are available. Because he's also a guy, he could do the TV thing for a year and then go back and try to find another job. He could easily do that. I do think in the case of Cal, like, it would come down to what jobs are available. And he may view it in a nostalgic sense as well. Like, listen, that's an untapped area. He could go in there. He could win over every recruit in the Chicagoland area. It's Cal, so he's not going there unless he's got NIL money. And they gave Chris Holtman some NIL money to
work
with, too. Charlie might know better than I do, but
they gave him like a significant amount. He wanted certain assurances from.
They paid him a lot, didn't they? Didn't they give him a $30 million contract?
Chris Holtman? Yeah, they gave him a 6-year deal. They gave
six
him
years, 5 30. Million a year,
wow.
Didn't they?
Yeah, they're gonna.
Am I right, Charlie?
They're gonna slow. I don't know the number, like the salary, but I know they gave him a pretty long leash. And yeah, it was reported. I think he even talked about it in his press conference that he wanted certain assurances that he was going to be able to have money to throw around in NIL. I mean, like, I think Mark Aguirre is involved in the collective. Like, there, a lot of their alumni basketball players are involved in this collective.
Interesting. Now it is worth noting, too, in his case, and this would be in Cal's case, too, you may not need to pony up a ton of money to hire him because he's essentially being paid 30, in the case of Cal Perry,
right?
He's getting a $33.5 million buyout if he were to hit the open market. And because of that, you may not need to compensate him as much in terms of a salary. It's the same thing as Russell Wilson, right? Russell Wilson didn't need to go out and seek a lucrative contract because the Broncos are already paying him a crap load of money
right.
to go be the quarterback somewhere else. Be the same thing with Cal. He would be making a ton of money to go coach somewhere else. So he may not look for a super lucrative contract, and he may say, you know what, kick that back into an NIL fund for me.
Or like you said, like he could go to one of the studios and be a star television
for
guy
sure. yeah.
and not have to worry about any of this any mm-hmm. longer after an illustrious career and being 65 years of age.
But he's one of those guys, too, who
career coach
fits this era. Right? He fits yeah. this NIL era. It's everything he's dealt with over the course of his career. And it's part of why I am a little surprised Kentucky hasn't had a bit more success. So, to
if
answer
you
your,
can't do it at Kentucky consistently anymore, are you going to be able to do it at DePaul?
Well, I think you're moving to an easier conference.
There's also
a,
not
a slightly
the,
easier conference.
The difference, right, is like Kentucky expects national championships.
Right.
If you're DePaul, just making the conference, not even every year, every so often at DePaul. Like that's so much better than
yeah,
what
but
they've
that's
had.
Not, but that's not what Cal's in it for.
No,
Cal doesn't want to get to the tournament every now and again.
No, but he could view it as I could bring this program back. Part of
well, that's not going to happen now because they just gave a different right. guy 6 years.
Yes. So to answer your original question, Charlie, I don't think DePaul moved too quick. I think if you're DePaul and you have a guy of the ilk of Chris Holtmann available, you go do that. You go hire that guy because, quite frankly, Chris Holtmann probably going to end up being one of the 3 to 5 best names that were going to be on the coaching market this offseason. And for DePaul to be the one that lands that, I think is pretty significant.
All right. So our good friend Coach Hurley at UConn. UConn was up 52-19 at halftime. And this was Hurley's halftime interview.
Over to Tracy.
Coach, you're shaking your head. What's wrong?
Everything should be automatic this time of year. And just, you know, defensively, it's human nature, I guess. But just to throttle down like that late, that's not championship level.
Well, what will be the sticking point in the locker room when you have a lead like this?
In this tournament, if you don't keep everything at the absolute highest level, like automatic, every possession, things go bad for you in this tournament. So, yeah, we got to grow up a little bit. The last couple of minutes I didn't like.
Appreciate it. Typical Dan Hurley, guys.
All right.
Dan Hurley.
Red ass.
What do you make of it when coaches do this? Because this happens a lot in college football.
Are, man.
Nick Saban would do this all the time where they'd just be like beating the brakes off some team and they come into halftime all pissed off.
Bro, it's the only way they know how to do things. That's how they're
right.
wired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some ways, it's what makes them good. It's also stuff like that that makes them burn out sooner rather than later.
I think the other thing, too, with Hurley is if you remember back to UConn's run last year, they blew out every team they faced in their path. And so he has this expectation of it's got to be a blowout every single time. We were as good. We were championship good last year because we didn't let off the gas at any point along the way, no matter how much we were kicking the opponent's ass by. This is who we are.
By the way, they had a 52-19 lead at the half.
Right. It's insane.
They won 91-52.
It's insane that coaches sometimes take it to that extent. But listen, he's got a championship expectation. And if that's what brings you championships, then by all means, coach that way.
Yeah. It's working.
Yeah.
It's working.
Mm-hmm.
Char Dog, what else you have?
All right. Last one here really quickly. I'm just curious. We've talked about the expectations for Caleb Williams and how we're willing to give him a little bit of a longer leash just because it is his rookie year. How bad does it have to be before you're like, whoa, this is an issue? Like, we have some serious problems here.
Well, I think it'll be an eye test. It's not going to be statistics.
it's going to be, hey, the ball's not coming out quick. Hey, he's trying to do too much. Hey, he's walking into sacks. Hey, he's doing a lot of the stuff that the previous quarterback was doing. He's got to be better than what we saw for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Which may, some may think it's a a realistic bar. Some may, people may think it's too high, too low, from day one. By the time we get to the end of the 2024 season, my expectation is you're going to use that pick for a quarterback at one overall. You've set the table in a nice fashion. He's got to be better than what we've seen the last 3 years here at the quarterback position.
Well, he's got to be, by year three, a top half quarterback in the league, because we see it all the time with these ascending quarterbacks that year three, if you don't have it figured out by year three, in all likelihood, you're not going to figure it out.
I would hope that he becomes, by year three, he's a top 10 quarterback. You're using the first number one overall pick.
Yes.
In the draft on him. He's A in year one. He's got to be better than the guy he's replacing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I would use the eye test as the ultimate litmus test.
And the other part of it all, too, is you had the number one overall pick. In all likelihood, when Caleb Williams' third year is up, you're not going to have the number one overall pick.
Correct.
That's the difference.
Yes. But he's got, look, I mean, that's reality. The infrastructure's there. He's got to be better than what we've seen. Justin had 5 wins last year. There were 7 wins total. Two of them were from Tyson Bagent starting. You know, the stats were the stats. You can't have 3 games in the final 8 games of the season where you don't score an offensive touchdown. It's got to be better. That's why you segued from Justin to him. That's why you traded for Keenan Allen and you may draft another receiver. It's got to be better than what we've seen the last 3 years. Whether that's fair or not, that's reality in the NFL.
No doubt about it. All right, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the landing spot that he's going into, because we've compared it to Andrew Luck. Connor brought up a good name yesterday that we also want to get into as well. That is kind of similar to what Caleb Williams is landing into, so we'll discuss all that when we come back. Tyler Rocky in for Sylvie on Waddle and Sylvie.
This is Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Ah, commuting in Chicago. If you're stuck, stick with Waddle and Sylvie. Weekdays 2 to 6.
You're still baffled by this, huh?
Yeah, I mean, look,
Waddle can't believe that people enjoyed Charlie's Kermit impersonation from earlier today. If you missed any of that, check it out on the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, Waddle and Sylvie,
It was very muted. It was just kind of like Charlie talking in a softer...
Kermit is muted, though. He's a very soft-spoken frog.
Give me, an animated Kermit. Because there's moments of animated Kermit.
When he's, shaking. Oh, I can't really do that as well.
Right, because then you would actually have to truly do an imitation instead of just talking in a lower voice.
I mean, no offense to Jim Henson, but yeah.
Oh, we're calling out that
I'm just saying, when you're doing that many amazing voices, that many iconic voices, you're kind of working within your own range.
Yeah. Let's take Philly Sid's call real quick because he's been holding.
What's up, Sid?
Hey, guys, just wanted to end your weekend with an awesome meathead question.
Nice.
So, love it.
I mean, obviously, it's pretty basic. We know that the Bears are going to draft QB. It most likely has got to be Caleb Williams. So given the fact that they brought your boy in from the Chargers, who gets number 13 this year?
Oh, I think that's Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
I heard Cap saying, and I don't know what his... Thanks, Sid. Have a great weekend. I heard Cap saying that, from what he heard, Caleb Williams was going to wear 0 or 1.
Well, it's interesting because DeAndre Swift wore 0 last year.
Right.
And he took 4.
Right.
For this upcoming season with the Bears. So
maybe that's a good indication that Caleb Williams may be wearing 0.
Cool. Can you imagine?
How much do you think would piss people off if he wore 1?
Can you imagine the cult?
Yeah, that would not go well. And I don't think that that's something he would want to do.
No, I agree. Oh, boy. That would be something.
That would just be like poking the bear. I mean, there's no reason to put yourself in that situation.
Listen, everything that guy does is super calculated. Everything about
it. This guy wrote F Utah on his fingernails. I think he's fine poking the bear.
I think it's different at the NFL level. I think he was at the top of the hill in college football. And as you heard Jalen Johnson say, now he may quickly become king of the hill as well at the NFL level, but there is a period of time where he's going to have to ingratiate himself to the locker room.
Right.
So I don't think he's coming in. I think he'll come in with a measured approach. That would be my projection.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, so looking at this Bears roster now, we kind of have a good feel for who the main weapons are going to be. Obviously, there can be some supplemental pieces for the remainder of free agency and the draft as well. I was telling you a little bit earlier, I don't think we're going to get a lot of big-time cuts this year, training camp cuts, because of the same thing that we talked about with the draft, how a lot of these GMs, it seems like, aren't going to put a lot of value on rounds maybe 5 through 7 of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already seen that take place with Ryan Poles. But because of the fact that there are so few underclassmen in the draft, the fewest we've seen, I think that is going to be a big reason why a lot of these GMs are probably going to want to keep a number of these players. Even if it does cost them a bit more money, they're going to want to keep some of these players on their team instead of cut them in training camp in favor of a young rookie, just because the rookies may not be NFL quality this year in the latter rounds.
Well, you're going to have a salary issue with a lot of these guys.
Sure,
if you want to keep a roster filled with more veteran players, because the free agency class, and by free agents I mean guys that aren't drafted,
mm-hmm.
isn't as talented or deep as it has been in recent years, that's a financial commitment that I'm not sure everyone can make. Because if you're keeping a 3, 4, 5 year, you know, NFL veteran instead of a rookie free agent, mm-hmm. it's going to cost you more, and that all will add up. So I think in theory, what you're saying makes sense, but I think at the end of the day, I don't know that every team is going to, despite the fact that each team's going to have in excess of $30 million more added to their salary cap,
mm-hmm.
I think that that's still going to be a problem. I think every team is still going to have a certain number of rookie players because it's the only way to get under the number.
So regardless of all that, in terms of the landing spot, and now that we've got a feel for what this Bears team is going to look like this season, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore on the outside, you bring in DeAndre Swift, you've got Cole Kmet, you added Gerald Everett, your offensive line, you're returning a number of players from last year, you bring in a couple different guys who can maybe play center for you as well. It's shaping up to be the best landing spot we've ever seen for a rookie quarterback that is being drafted number one overall.
Or so it appears.
Or so it appears. So there's a couple of contestants to that. One that obviously gets brought up is Andrew Luck and the situation he landed in with the Indianapolis Colts.
What year was that? 2012?
2012, yes. So Andrew Luck lands with the Colts. This was his supporting cast on offense. He had Reggie Wayne, albeit in his year 34 season, but he went out and had a productive year, 106 catches.
Hell of a player.
1355 with yards, 5 touchdowns.
Is Reggie in the Hall of Fame yet?
I don't believe Reggie's a Hall of Famer.
He'll make it there at some point if he's not.
His backfield was Vic Ballard was his starting running back, who was a rookie, a fellow rookie. His other receiver opposite Reggie Wayne was Donnie Avery, and then he had a pair of rookie tight ends in Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. His offensive line had mostly experienced guys, but his left tackle was Anthony Costanzo, who was at
local
the time
camp.
A like second-year player.
Yeah. I don't think Red. You know what? Now that I look at his numbers, I don't think he'll.
He only made one All Pro.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he'll get to the Hall of Fame.
Okay,
but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, looking at that versus what the Bears have, but then Connor brought up an interesting one yesterday in terms of a supporting cast, and it was actually the year prior. It was when the Carolina Panthers drafted Cam Newton and the situation that Cam was dropped into. So here's what Cam Newton had. He had D'Angelo Williams in the backfield with him. And
fantastic player.
Jonathan Stewart was also on this team.
Right. That we remember that look, combination?
That was
Stewart
that was,
and D'Angelo Williams?
Yeah. Yes, Jonathan Stewart was on this team.
This is the 2011?
2011 Panthers. He had at receiver Steve Smith, also had Legadu Nani, and then his tight end room was Greg Olson and Jeremy Shockey. Along his offensive line, he had a Pro Bowl center in Ryan Khalil, and he had a number of other veterans along that line. Just looking at tenure here, 8 years, 7 years, 4 years, 6 years, and then he had a rookie right tackle at the time. So a lot of veterans along that offensive line there. But I think the thing that differentiates what Caleb is dropping into and what those other quarterbacks dropped into, first of all, I think the second receiver is significantly better on the Chicago Bears than either of those teams.
Yes.
But on top of that, too, defensively, what those teams had is not nearly what the Chicago Bears have. The Bears conservatively should have a top 10 defense this year. And who knows? Maybe it's top 7, top 5. Like, they did make a couple of, you'd imagine they'll make some additions in the draft as well. Maybe they use the ninth pick or whatever their second first-round pick is on a edge rusher to shore up that side of the ball. You locked up Jalen Johnson as well. You added Kevin Byard to the mix, too. So, conservatively, this should be a top-10 defense, and I think that's part of making life easier for a quarterback as well is, hey, kid, we don't need you to go out there and score 27 points. We only need you to score 20.
Right.
And that's good enough to win games for us.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, we were mostly looking at the offense, but I do believe that if you factor in the defensive part of this, this will certainly make life easier. Like, you don't have to find yourself in a shootout every Sunday.
Right.
So that your defense can kind of set the tone and take some pressure off of you. I think this was a great, investigative work by Connor, because, you know, that is a pretty good group, but I would suggest you, other than the offensive line, I think you can look to the Bears as having better weapons.
Weapons for sure. I mean, even like a veteran running
and
back.
Greg Olson has had a fantastic career, but I mean, is Greg Olson and Jeremy Shockey, and at that point Jeremy Shockey's 31 years of age. Mm-hmm. That season, he had 37 catches for 455 yards and 4 touchdowns. I'll put Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett up with Greg Olson and Jeremy Shockey at that point in their career and call it a draw. Mm-hmm. I think the best tight end of all of them, if you know, of the four of them, is Greg Olson.
Yeah.
But that year, he had 45 catches for 540 yards and 5 touchdowns. I would still say that this Bears offense would have that. That's the best setup offensively for a young quarterback that I've seen, including the Colts and Cam Newton, what he had in Carolina over the last 15 years.
And that's part of what makes the optimism where it is for the Chicago Bears right now.
Now, again, I would go back and tell you, like, Jordan Gross, Trevell Wharton, Ryan Khalil, Jeff Hangartner, and Byron Bell, that is a better offensive line than the one the Bears will run out there. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Khalil and Jordan Gross probably would get more recognition. I would say they would get the edge on the offensive line, but it's close.
You've got some young pieces on your offensive line. You do have some veterans, obviously, like Nate Davis. But
and by the way, just to also make the point, that year Cam Newton was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
So the expectation.
Andrew Luck was a Pro Bowler.
So when you are surrounding these guys as rookies with the amount of infrastructure that Cam Newton had and that Andrew Luck had, it's not.
The trend says
he should be somebody that plays well with this group, albeit in his rookie season.
And not just that, though, but you think about the NFC when you're talking about what his Pro Bowl outlook could be like this year. When you look at the NFC, it's not like the AFC in terms of the arms race at quarterback. Like,
well, you're going to have you're going to get Dak. You're going to have Jalen Hurts. You're going to have Jared Goff.
Jordan Love.
You're going to have to think about
Brock Purdy.
Matthew Stafford.
You want to throw Kyler in that mix too?
No, but I you could. it's going to be. It's not what it is.
It's
not the meat grinder that it is in
like
the AFC.
The AFC has four guys who I wouldn't put Caleb Williams, even if he were Rookie of the Year, I wouldn't think he'd jump into that stratosphere.
You have Josh Allen. You have Tua. You have
Joe Burrow.
Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson.
Josh Allen.
You have Stroud, too.
Yeah, you have CJ Stroud. You have Trevor Lawrence.
Justin Herbert.
You're going to have Justin Herbert. You're going to have Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
You know, so, like, yeah, that's a tough crew to hang with. But, look, again, I'm not even going to sit here and tell you, well, he's got to go to the Pro Bowl or else this was a mistake. I'm just telling you from my own perspective, he's got to be better than what we've seen over the last 3 years.
And he's got a very good chance to be better than what we've seen.
Because he's going to have more to work with than the guy that was here the last 3 years.
No doubt.
And I don't think that is putting the bar too high at all, is that even as a rookie, my expectation is that he will be a better complete quarterback in his rookie season than what we saw the last 3 years. And if not, then it hasn't turned out early the way that I had hoped it would turn out early.
Right.
Like, I'm expecting to see improvement on offense really quickly because of the infrastructure that's been put in place.
Define improve. Like, if you were to give an offensive ranking.
Well, where were they last year? I mean,
I'd imagine it was mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be. You're built to be top half of the league.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've the first overall pick. You've just traded a fourth for Keenan Allen. DJ Moore at 1,300 yards receiving. You gave $12 million a year to Cole Kmet. You signed Gerald Everett. You signed DeAndre Swift. Your Khalil Herbert has averaged over 4.5 yards per carry. Roshon Johnson had a nice rookie season. You've got an offensive line that I'm a little bit concerned about. But they're okay and probably, you know, that's probably an offensive line that ranks middle of the pack, right? So. Yeah. Look, you've got to have significant improvement over what we've seen the last few years. Consistent improvement.
Right.
Not a flash here and a flash there, but at the end of the game, it's not good enough. It's got to be better, and it's got to be more consistent than it's been.
I did look. So they are 18th. They were 18th in scoring last year, but if you look at it, like, it's buoyed by a lot of big performances. Like the Commanders game, you put up 40. You had the Falcons game, you put up 37. The Raiders game, you put up 30. And some of these aren't necessarily Justin Fields' games where he's going out and lighting up the scoreboard there. But so, yeah, it was kind of up and down, and I think that's the nature of what he's walking into. Real quick, I do want to take Chris in North Carolina. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. I just want to say Tom, you're my all-time favorite Bear. It's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, Chris.
And I remember growing up as a kid down south with parents from Chicago. We would play Tom Waddle in the pool. We'd jump off the diving board and try to catch the diving pass.
Oh, my.
They named a game after you.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I'm flattered. Thank you, Chris.
So, anyway, my question is, so I was watching the Keenan Allen highlights, like all the Bears fans, and I'm watching Justin Herbert sling it all over the yard, and thinking to myself, wow, wouldn't it be great to have that guy? But then that got me thinking, how many teams in the NFL would basically trade the situation that they're in for the quarterback situation that the Bears are in? And by that, I mean, you guys were just rattling off all the Pro Bowl quarterbacks in the league. And I'm wondering if even some of those teams would trade their quarterback and the money that they owe their quarterback to be able to be sitting where the Bears are sitting with the number one pick and resetting their quarterback clock and all of that.
It's a good question, Chris. Like,
thanks for the call.
Look, I don't know whether or not the Detroit Lions would be willing to trade places with the Bears and get rid of Jared Goff, who's had a couple really good seasons in Detroit the last couple of years, took them to, you know, were they in the NFC title game?
NFC title game,
With the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they would be willing to trade places, Goff for Caleb Williams.
Why don't we do that at 6 o'clock? We'll look at some of the quarterback situations, and next we'll do what to watch for as well. It's Waddle and Sylvie. Tyler Rocky in for Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is Waddle and Sylvie. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Waddle and Sylvie get you set for your weekend viewing with What to Watch For.
Yeah!
That's right. What to Watch For is brought to you by Connie's Frozen Pizza. Get to know the true Chicago style with Connie's Frozen Pizza. Born in Chicago, enjoyed everywhere. And if you're caller 10 right now,
caller
you'll
10.
Win free pizza from Connie's. 312-332-3776. What are you watching for this weekend?
Well, I mean, obviously, basketball is going to be on the television. But as you brought to my attention, the remake of Roadhouse is now available on Prime Video. So I will be settled into my couch and watching Jake Gyllenhaal play the role
of ass kicker.
Of ass kicker. That is correct. I believe Conor McGregor's in this
yes,
as well.
Yes, he is.
But the remake of Roadhouse will be what I'm watching this weekend.
I'm also going to go to Amazon Prime. It's a movie I watched earlier this week. Ricky Stenicki. Have you seen the...
Who's this?
This is with Zac Efron. It's a Zac Efron bro comedy. Yeah. Zac Efron, John...
Have you seen the what was the
Mike
movie?
And Dave.
That one, and also, was there one like Neighbors or something? Where
I haven't... They put
like a frat house next to...
Yeah,
yeah, that was good
I don't think I've seen Neighbors, but I watched this one, and it's basically... They've used this random name as an alias. Him and his two buddies, Zac Efron and his two buddies, have used this random...
Oh, this is like what Danny Lynch's and his buddies are doing.
...name as an alias for their entire lives whenever they need, like, to weasel their way out of a situation. They always say, oh, we got to go see Ricky. We got to go see Ricky. And then they have to, like, actually introduce Ricky to the world, and they find this random actor in Atlantic City.
Nice.
To do it.
Is it a movie or a series?
It's a movie. I will say the first 30 minutes or so, I was kind of like, oh, I'm not really into this. But then once it gets going, like after the first 30 minutes, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
It's worth watching.
By the way, I saw him in Iron Claw, Zac Efron. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah?
Very good.
You were touting Iron Claw.
Yeah, Miller. I think Miller was the one that turned me on to it, but it was a great movie.
It's great.
What do you got, Chardog?
All right. The 3-hour finale of Joey's season of The Bachelor airs on Monday. Who will he pick, Kelsey or Daisy? I'm excited to find out. I have my predictions, but we're going to finally know, and then we'll know who the next Bachelorette is.
All right. Jack, what do you got?
So it is an NCAA tournament game. Gonzaga versus Kansas tomorrow at 2:15. That's going to be a coaching masterpiece between Bill Self and Mark Few. Kansas still a little beat up. I think Gonzaga might have a chance.
I think, Jack, you should also sit down and watch some anatomy videos as well.
Online biology classes, some YouTube biology classes. All right, that is What to Watch For. It's all brought to you by Connie's Frozen Pizza. When we come back, we'll talk a little more football and get you ready for your weekend as well. It's Waddle and Sylvie here on ESPN 1000.
This is Waddle and Sylvie. Waddle and Sylvie. On Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.